KVOE AM 1400 and 96.9 FM, live and local, presents The On-Air Chat. And now, here are your hosts, Aaron Harder and Ron Thomas.
And a beautiful Wednesday morning to all. Record-setting Wednesday morning, 73 degrees. This is The On-Air Chat. We're brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. For commercial dirt work, demolition, dirt hauling, and more, call Bruce Davis Construction, 620-342-5001. Good morning, Ron Thomas.
Morning, Aaron. How are you?
I'm doing good. You're going to need to shed that long sleeve shirt for too long here.
You know, we just have a handful of days left in what promises to be a record-setting February as far as warmth goes.
It's been ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, one of the top warmest ever since they started taking weather records back in, what, the late 1800s, I think they have something like that. So,
maybe
yeah,
we'll
it hasn't felt that warm all this month to me. I mean, we've had warm days, but the breezes have been a little cool.
Yeah.
Kind of keep a chill on things. But now, after yesterday in the 70s, pedal to the metal, and the birds are a-chirping and the grass is a-greening.
It'd be maybe that'd be a good program sometime, talk about past weather events with our two guests today.
Well, they know history. They know local history.
They do.
And they're in here live and local with us here this morning.
They are. Good morning, Lisa Soler.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, Ron.
How are you?
I'm well. I'm good. I'm looking forward to the warmer temperatures. I mean, after that cold snap we had back in, what, January, which seems like forever ago.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, yeah, it's crazy. So I don't mind, even though I'm wearing a sweater, too. So
yeah. And when you first came to town, you used to be this guy's sidekick, but now he's your sidekick. Good morning, Greg Jordan.
Well, thank you, Aaron. Good morning to you. I am her sidekick. I'm smart enough to get out of her
way. Happy to be. Yeah, happy to be.
And happy to be, yes.
Yes, we have the executive director and the deputy director of the Lyon County History Center gracing our presence here this morning on the On-Air Chat, which is a monthly occurrence.
It is. It's great.
Yeah, it's great.
We learn a lot.
Every time they're in here, we learn a lot.
That's why we're here. That's the whole reason for our being, is so people can learn about our history and appreciate it, and so we can make those connections and try not to make the same mistakes. Yeah.
Well, you have an annual meeting coming up, don't you?
We do have an annual meeting coming up. It'll be in March. We're going to try a Saturday afternoon, something we haven't tried, and we're going to have entertainment by Annie. And the Tallgrass Express,
nice.
And so we think that'll be a good day.
23rd.
So Saturday, March 23rd, 1 o'clock.
We'll have a dessert bar. So have your lunch and then come
so
and grab
some
dessert.
So is your board all set? You've got a group in place?
We have a couple that we need to vote on.
Okay.
There are two going off. They've fulfilled their terms, and so we'll be voting on two new ones. And should be we have a really good group of board of directors. That obviously helps a lot. But the two new ones should be coming on will even further enhance that. So the future looks bright, as they say.
So do you want to drop any names?
I can and will. Chuck Torres, if you know Chuck.
Yeah.
Chuck will be one of the new members. And
pending a vote.
Thank you. and Jan Briggs.
Okay.
We would try to get Scott for years, and he kept blowing it off to Jan. Jan finally said yes. So,
well, she didn't say no.
Correct. Which we'll take.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like Greg said, we've been reaching out to both Scott and Jan, and it was usually a no. And so this time she didn't say no.
So we reeled
her
in.
So we're just going to take that as a yes.
Yeah, if you vote her in, she's in.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no turning back at that.
Right.
So, and who are the two that have given you fine service over the years?
So Jesse Solis has served his 6 years. Jesse's been a huge benefit to us, and we're going to miss him. But he'll still stick around.
He said he's going to stick around for
help us do some other things, special projects.
Yep.
And Colleen Mitchell. Colleen, as you know, is very active and involved in the entire community and has been a real, real help to us. We're going to try to keep her around as a volunteer as well. So
yeah, you just call her. She has trouble saying no, too.
She does have trouble saying no. And if she doesn't do it, Rick will do it.
Yeah. We have her on speed dial, so all we have to do is text. But
so you're not really losing two then in the
overall
sense of things.
We're moving them to a different capacity.
Yeah, that's a good thing about having a good board, though. Is
absolutely.
Your voting members stay the same as per the statutes, but your community grows every time.
Yeah, we're quite blessed to have the people we do.
Well, and we want to jumpstart our friends group again. You know, with the pandemic, we had our friends group, the History Heroes, and then with the pandemic, it really stagnated and eventually
died.
Water. Yeah. I'm watching other things going on. But yeah, eventually they're, you know, just it was nothing. I mean, I think people were looking at what was happening around them, which is totally understandable. And so we want to jumpstart our friends group again and and really get them involved and solidify the purpose of the group and move forward. So we're excited. 2024 is going to be a great year.
So obviously we have a lot of activities going on at the History Center with a very limited staff. And so volunteers are a huge benefit to us. And so the Friends Group will be the group of volunteers so we can do more things for the public. And we look forward to having people be involved, lay people, if you will, being involved with our activities.
And I know you're involved two of the schools. Have you had the pop-up event with Village School? Did that happen already?
No.
Okay.
That will be on Leap Day, Day, February 29th from 6 to 7. This has been a great project with Village Elementary. You know, a couple of years ago, several years ago, actually, one of the third grade teachers reached out and she had been to a workshop and said, you know, I want to do some type of pop-up museum. I had also been to a museum conference and they were talking about this. So it was really just, you know, the stars aligned, the moons aligned, you know, everything, the planets aligned. And it just all came together very nicely, being able to go to the school. I will go out to the school and ask for their help to help, you know, celebrate Emporia's birthday in February. And then they will start working and doing the research. They have their themes. Then they come to the museum and see how an exhibit is put together, some of our research methods, some artifacts that we have. And then the culmination of this whole project is the pop-up museum. They organize it. The students are in charge of figuring out where to put the displays, how to set it up. They bring the reception treats. I mean, they're just 100% involved. And every time I go in and say, I really need your help to help celebrate Emporia's birthday, are you guys up for that? You know, do you want to help? And it's always this, yeah, really loud, you know, the 60 third graders this year. Yeah. So, it's a good project. And like I said, it all kind of just came together. And
it'll be interesting to see what they came up with.
Yes. I'm looking forward to it. So I pull the artifacts. Some of them are hands-on, educational artifacts, but then some we put in cases so they can see the difference in that hands-on aspect versus making sure we put them in a case. So
so this will be on the, what, the 28th then?
29th.
Okay.
29th. So we're,
good time of the day.
So they will come during the day to set everything up, but the actual reception is from 6 to 7.
Okay.
So, and then I think we're going to keep them up. We'll move all the displays downstairs to the first floor. So we'll take our crazy quilts down that we have up now. We'll take those down. We'll set up tables. And so usually in the past, we've either kept them up for a couple of days, depending on when we had the event. And then the teachers would come and grab them. And I thought, you know, let's keep them up. So I'm hoping to keep them up for a couple of weeks, so people can see what, you know, if they can't make it on Thursday, the 29th, you know, still let people, you know, see what, first of all, what our collaborations are and our, you know, our partnerships, but also see the great work that these third graders have done. And so, you know, the community can come visit it and see it as well. And it also gives them an opportunity if their grandparents or family members can't see it that night, maybe they can bring them in throughout that time. So,
well, Emporia's birthday was this past Tuesday.
Yes. Yes.
1857.
1857. Yeah.
There's math involved. I don't know how many years it is.
That's why we work in a museum.
More than 100.
More than 100, yes.
Well, and did not this month also Lyon County have
its Lyon County also had an anniversary.
Yes.
And, of course, Emporia State, we just had
Emporia
Founders
State. Day, yeah.
So, yeah.
A lot happened in February for Emporia in Lyon County.
Well, it was really cool. Typically in February, there wasn't anything else to do. So let's start a county, a town, and a year.
Sounds good.
Oh, you can't break the ground for that? Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll just wait for it to thaw. It'll happen in a couple of weeks. So, yeah.
You want to get to our subject?
Yeah. You know, this. So every February is Black History Month. And I know last year we came. I had Jan Houston as my sidekick or my, you know, guest. And she does a great job with digging up these forgotten stories or hidden stories. And we talked about Dunlap, which was an African-American community. And so this year I wanted to, because we never got to Emporia, we, you know, focused a lot on Dunlap. In fact, the entire chat. So this year I thought about, okay, let's center on Emporia, so we can talk about Stringtown, which was the traditionally Black neighborhood, Black community. And, you know, there's so many sites. And Leland Danes with Visit Emporia approached me back last year, fall of last year, and was thinking, you know, is there a way we can put together sites? You know, okay. Identify sites and maybe create some type of driving tour. And it was, and you know, the light bulb went off and was like, yeah, let's do that. And I had been collecting history for the Black community, the African American community, since I was hired on. And so we started to pull those different sites. We have this great resource here. It's a book called Black Emporia, The African American Experience Through the Lives of Emporians. It was, the writing contributors were Nellie Essex and Elizabeth Williams, and then the consulting editor was Carol Marshall. And, you know, it's such a wealth of information, and it was written in 2001. And so that was, you know, that's always my first place to go. But then, you know, within the newspapers, within our collections, it's just more resources that these stories have been hidden. Because they really, in the newspapers, they didn't talk about the African Americans. Yeah. And when they did, you know, in the 1880s, 1890s, you know, early 1900s, it wasn't always in a positive light. And there's just a wealth of information about these, the members of the Black community. So it just kind of all, you know, that came together too to create this. Eventually it'll be a handout and we'll put it on our website, both the Visit Emporia and the Lyon County History Center, where people can do this driving tour for these different historical sites.
So how many stops will we have? How many sites are we looking at? I mean,
quite a number. I don't have a number.
More than a handful?
More than a handful. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Well, I think
so.
We'll
10 sites.
Need to touch on those.
Let's do that when we come back from our break. You're listening to the On Air Chat. We're brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. This is KVOE. We are live and local.
Construction jobs don't go away when the weather gets colder. Bruce Davis Construction is available all winter long. When you need commercial dirt work, from demolition to prepare for a building site or parking lot to dirt work and hauling, Bruce Davis will give you a quality job. Bruce Davis Construction, proud to be involved in recent construction jobs, including the addition at Emporia High School, Emporia Travel Plaza, Glendale, and the David Trailer Zoo. Call Bruce Davis Construction at 620-342-5001.
Listen to Hornet Basketball, home and away, on Mix 104.9, the mobile app, and at KVOE.com.
KVOE, live and local, and time now for a look at headlines, being brought to you by IPC, the Insurance Planning Center, an AgroSure agency partner at 529 Commercial Street, Suite 5, for all your commercial, business, and group health insurance needs. From the 24-hour KVOE newsroom and a look at all the latest local headlines, here is Chuck Samples.
Good morning, everybody. Formal charges are now pending after a shots-fired call and an arrest in central Emporia last night. Juan Cervantes Jr., age 33, of Emporia, was arrested last night on suspicion of being a felon in possession of a firearm, plus other allegations. We have the full details online at KVOE.com. Speaking of arrests, the no-labels Kansas political party will remain on the ballot, despite the recent arrest of a man in Florida on suspected election fraud. George Andrews of Dade City may well come to Johnson County for court hearings with extradition. Process is underway. And construction continues for the Emporia Pavilion shopping development at 24th and Industrial Road. Above ground work now involving three stores, the future homes of Five Below, Maurice's, and Old Navy. KVOE forecast from the TV 13 weather team. Partly sunny and 73 today, light breezes. Cloudy tonight and 44. Blustery tomorrow with sunshine and 63. And occasionally breezy Friday and 61. I'm Chuck Samples, KVOE News.
Currently, we do have a light southeast breeze, mostly sunny skies, 55 degrees at KVOE, live and local. Headlines are brought to you this hour by IPC, the Insurance Planning Center, an AgroSure agency partner at 529 Commercial Street, Suite 5, and also in Eureka and Wichita.
It's of interest.
Welcome back to the on-air chat. Ron Thomas, Aaron Harder hosting. Lisa Soler, Greg Jordan from the Lyon County History Center are our guests. Right before the break, we were talking about a soon-to-be tour around Emporia. What would be the first stop?
Well, the first stop would be Stringtown area. And I don't know, you know, we were talking about, you know, that area. It's the area in East Emporia. In fact, I'll just read a little. Stringtown is the name given to the northeast part of Emporia. It was a predominantly African-American neighborhood. As we were talking during the break, Greg said William Allen White coined the phrase, and I had to correct him.
Obviously, I was incorrect.
But, he did use the phrase, though.
He did use the phrase.
Yes, so that was something.
That part was correct.
And I think that's what led to people thinking that William Allen White coined the phrase is because it was frequently mentioned in the Gazette, in his newspaper. And the first mention of it was actually 1871 in a newspaper. And so there's no origin story of how the name came to be. But it was the area that Stringtown was located from Exchange Street east to East Street and from 12th Avenue south to 9th Avenue. So that area.
Say those again.
So Exchange Street east to East Street and 12th Avenue south to 9th Avenue.
Okay.
So that area, yeah, and it was always referred to as Stringtown. And so we kind of start there, even though there were other pockets where black community members lived. This one really was, I mean, because it was named, I think, was part of it. That was named, you know, more frequently. But so within Stringtown area, the former site of the home of Burt Rich. And I know I've talked about him before in past chats, but everything that I've heard about him, talking to people that had known him, he was a character. I mean, he, I think, had this loud, boisterous voice.
He was a force of nature.
Yeah.
Loud, in charge, that sort of thing.
Definitely. So he moved here in 1880 with his siblings. As an adult, he would grace the streets of Emporia. He was a shrewd businessman. He owned numerous properties throughout Emporia in Stringtown, but also in different places in Emporia. He had a billiard hall. At one time, he owned a church and a parsonage. and that's an interesting story. And he was also an owner of a circus. He was the largest African – he had the largest African-American construction firm west of the Mississippi, and he had well over 100 men
on –
And he was based here. Had well over 100 men on his payroll. And so his house will be at – that was at 1202 Sylvan will be on the site – or will be on the – will be one of the sites listed. Moving a little forward, we'll have Paul Terry – house, former residence, will be on the tour. You know, he – I think that was one of the first stories that I learned about when I moved here was Paul Terry and how he broke the color barrier for Emporia High School basketball. Yeah. And it's really interesting when you're researching it's interesting when you're researching a group of people that have been marginalized and disenfranchised for so long that their history has been forgotten, but his wasn't, or Rich's wasn't.
Yeah. Or it all being negative.
And you know, you hear about his accomplishment, you know, that he was part of the state, you know, championship basketball team in the 1930s. And what you don't hear is it wasn't an easy road for him. There was still racism. So even though – in fact, when he was recruited by Al Smith, Dean Smith's dad, his dad – so Paul Terry's dad didn't want him to go out for it because he knew what was going to happen. And Paul was like, nope, I'm going to go out for it and I'm going to, you know, stick with it. And he did. He became – I don't think he was – he was not the first player of high school sports in Kansas. There was a couple of other players. Even at the same time as Paul, there were a couple of other black basketball players in high school basketball. But he was the first to play on a championship team, even though he didn't get to play – the championship game, because if he was to have played, the officials for the tournament, the state tournament, said you would be the team would be disqualified. So he actually sat home, but they kept his name on the roster. So for a long time, everybody thought he played in the tournament because his name remained on the roster.
Yeah, if he would have played it, he wouldn't have had an empty score sheet.
Exactly.
And what year was that?
1934.
Okay.
Yeah.
Of course, he raised a heck of a family here, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Nadine's still around.
Yeah, there's
yeah,
a couple.
Yeah, just saw her a month or so ago at the Paul Terry Classic downtown.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of other sites on it on for the tour will be the Eastside Memorial Park, the former residence of A.J. Armstead Sr. and his son, A.J. Armstead Jr. These were two, the Armstead family, two generations of law enforcement. In fact, Andrew Armstead, Andy for short, he came to Emporia in 1880 when he was 10 years old. He was the first person of color to join the Emporia Police Department, joining the force in 1899.
Wow.
And we have a picture.
That math is easier.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Much.
Much. But so then his son, Andy Jr., he tried a couple of other jobs, and he eventually ended up on the Emporia – as part of the Emporia – law enforcement for the Emporia Police Department also. And in 1965, Andy was named the National Police Officer of the Month.
Junior?
Junior. Yeah, junior.
1965,
named National Police Officer of the Month by Master Detective Magazine. And so that issue had a six-page layout where they came to Emporia – and they had these photos. He was presented a certificate from the magazine, and then he also received a plaque from the Emporia Police Department.
You have the magazine?
I don't know. I'll have to look that up and see if we do.
Don't think we do.
So we might have to go to eBay.
But you have the six. You have the six pages, like a digital version or anything.
I don't think so.
It'd be neat to get the hands on.
I know it was, you know, again, an article in the paper in 1965, but and that's what we've been trying to do when we see when we uncover a story. You know, of course, we go to our collections, you know, and that's why I don't think we have it is because I've never seen it and I've done this research. But then we take it one step further and go, okay, now we need the magazine to show it. So
that really is the most important part of what it is that we do. The artifacts help us tell the story, but it's the story.
Sure.
That we're storytellers. So we save these stories and pass them along, like you were saying earlier. So you can not repeat mistakes, but you can repeat triumphs. And so that's really part and parcel of what we do is the stories.
So where do you find the positive aspects, like the book you were talking about earlier? Most of the stuff that was public, that was in the paper or in a magazine, was normally negative. Did they have their own small newspaper? Did they keep a lot of articles?
Actually, the black community, the African American community, did have a newspaper, and I think it was called The Citizen. I have it somewhere, but I can't find any
copies
of it. It was published here in Emporia, but I haven't been able to find anything. So yes, they did have a newspaper, but I will say, for the most part, like the book that I mentioned, Black Emporia. A lot of oral histories. The Emporia Citizen was a black newspaper here in Emporia. I don't think it lasted very long. A lot of it is the oral histories. Eventually, I mean, newspapers would point out when somebody from the black community had passed away, they would talk about how they were a wonderful person. They were, you know, an upright citizen. You know, it just always felt tempered with the bad stuff too. And hopefully we've moved away from that. It's interesting and to be able to take what was in the newspaper or take, you know, the oral history and find the good in it, even the bad, to try to find the good in it. I mean, and we do that for everything. I mean, for all of history. So,
well, Emporia was founded in 1857. Were the black families a part of the initial migration to this community, or when did they start arriving here?
So, like a lot of America, after the Civil War, there was the westward migration, and so some of the families moved here because of that. And then they were building two railroads, so the Santa Fe was being built and the Katy MKT was being built. So there were jobs, and then after the railroads were built, they were building highways. So then they stayed on to build the highway. So it's all part and parcel of the westward migration, the population shifting from the south and the north to the Midwest and the west. So Emporia were certainly part of that particular thing.
The Adairs arrived in Emporia in 1863, and that was the first African-American family to come to Emporia.
Okay.
And the Adairs is really interesting. I don't think I included them on – I didn't include them on the tour, but eventually the sites will expand.
Sure.
We just wanted to get something, put together at least with 10 sites. And so I tried to get them different parts of Emporia. But the Adairs had a all black woman's band around 1900. And unfortunately, it only lasted for a couple of years. And they just couldn't find enough venues to play. Especially locally, they would travel to Topeka. They would travel to play, but they didn't get enough interest locally to keep the band, you know, financially, you know, sustainable. So, and he wrote something. I can't remember the name. It was an Adair, and he wrote something in the newspaper to that effect, saying, you know, we'd like to continue, but because we don't have the local support, We just can't. So.
So what was the what was our population here? 1900. Ballpark.
In Emporia, yeah, would be around 10,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but the newspaper. One of my favorite stories, and I shouldn't say favorite, but one that impacted me early on. Ellen Burton, and just like this, Mr. Adair with the band used the newspaper as his platform. Ellen Burton. So during World War One, soldiers were killed in action, and they were buried over in Europe. I mean, very similar to World War II and other wars. But in the 1920s, like around 1928, the United States Congress passed legislation to pay for a trip for Gold Star mothers and unmarried widows of those soldiers. They would pay their way to Europe to visit the graves.
Tell them what Gold Star Mother means.
So Gold Star Mother is if you had a son or daughter killed in action. And so, all this is happening in Washington. They're wanting to send the Gold Star Mothers and the wives. And they always said, who hadn't remarried to Europe to visit the graves of the fallen. Well, in the South, the white Gold Star mothers did not want to travel with the black Gold Star mothers. And Ellen Burton, who was a part – in fact, she was an Adair originally. She wrote a letter to the editor. And I wanted to read an excerpt from it because – she in the letter to the editor, she's asked by people what she thinks of this, what's happening in the South. And so in the letter she writes, I don't believe this blame should be put on the South alone, because it is the same spirit that is found in the North, East, and West. I am ignored here as a Gold Star mother, but I can stand it better on dry land than I can at sea. And then she goes on, I am a true Gold Star mother, but I am ignored. For what? But lest you forget that skin may differ, but affection dwell the same in white and black. I am not going for, I have something better. And so people were asking her if she was going to make this trek, yeah, this trip. And her son actually is buried here. He died en route home from pneumonia, or from, I think, the flu maybe, influenza during World War I. But for her to be a black woman in 1930 to write a letter to the editor calling out the other Gold Star mothers, yep, for ignoring her is incredible. I mean, it was incredibly brave. And so when I first read that story, that's the story that, it's hidden. You discover it, and when you read it, it's a gut punch to, know that somebody felt that way. So
thank God we don't have that problem now.
Yeah. So we're not revisionists at the History Center. We present history as it happens, but we do try to emphasize the positive, which is not the same as being a revisionist. And there are lots of great stories about this or other communities within our community. But again, we present all the facts, all the ins and outs, the good and the bad. So, and Lisa does an excellent job of presenting both sides of the stories.
Well, and that's how we learn.
Sure.
Not to make those mistakes. I mean, you have to tell the bad part. I mean, and
because it makes you appreciate the good part.
The good thing is, in some instances, you need to harp on the bad stuff so that it doesn't occur again.
Right.
But I think we're at the point of a society where we're, man, that was bad. Let's focus on the good.
Right.
Well, it shows the depth of these folks' character, and what they went through, how they raised their families, boy, tough going, but they persevered.
Persevered, exactly.
And we had an African American Masonic Lodge here.
Did not know that.
Let's see, Burt Rich's Billiard Hall. is on will be on the tour. And what I found in the research
– Is it still a business?
Yes. Let's see.
No longer,
but no. It's 316 Commercial.
316. That's on the east side.
East side.
I was thinking, is that where
Is that where Cowboy Shop was?
Around that area, a little north of that.
Across the street was the old what was S.C. Dixon's place? The Noose. Which was a billiards hall.
Right.
Yeah.
So he only operated it for a couple of years, but he would allow groups to meet on the second floor. It's a one-story building now, but it did have two stories at one time. And so the top floor was kind of a hall, and so it was used for various African-American meetings. There was this group called the Independent Voting Club, and it was made up of black community members. They would meet there. And then when the billiard hall closed, Dr. Christopher Lett, who was an African-American physician here, opened his practice there as well.
Okay.
Let's see. One other site that, again, the story kind of just happened. In 2018, the Oscar-winning movie Green Book came out. And I thought, you know, and it talks about the book, the Green Book, was for African American travelers. So they had this book to tell them where it was safe to stay, where it was safe to eat. Mm. And so I thought, well, I wonder if Emporia ever had a place in the book. And we did. It was Elliot's boarding house. Artilla Elliot had a boarding house. She would rent rooms out to African-American students who were attending both Kansas State Teachers College at the time and C of E. And so she would rent the rooms out to students, but she also had it listed in the Green Book. So, you know, African-American travelers knew. So that was at 816 Congress.
Okay.
So we've actually now moved from Stringtown and the traditionally African-American neighborhood. And there was a lot of African-Americans that lived, you know, closer to the center of the city because they worked for the railroad. And so they wanted to live close to where they worked. But this one, the Emporia Tourist Home Elliott's, was listed in the Negro Motorist Green Book for the first time in 1947. And it stayed listed, I mean, from year to year, it would stay in the book. Even after she passed away, ownership of the house went to Artilla's daughter, Eva Slade. And so it continued to be in the book. So I thought, you know, again, just because this movie came out, I decided to, let's see if, you know, if there was a home in Emporia that was listed in it. And there was. So just those small feats. You know, we know a lot about William Ellen White. We know a lot about Preston Plum and Mitt Wilhite and other, you know, prominent citizens. But it's sometimes these stories that kind of go unknown and hidden for so long that even that small act of having a boarding house, you know, had an impact on other people. So without the fanfare,
that's a lot of rich history.
It is quite.
They're interesting stories. I was totally unaware of the majority of that. And I've been here for nearly 40 years.
Agree.
So it's good to get that information out there. I would think our Hispanic history here is probably has some stories to tell too.
Absolutely.
We have some great stories from that community as well. In fact, we had an exhibit on that last fall, one of our most attended exhibits we've ever had. We really opened up a channel to the Latino community, and we plan on revisiting that again. But we had a We had an exhibit. In fact, we had two. We had one on the Hispanic community, and then one on fast pitch softball, which was a really big deal there with the Brown Bombers and the Brown Express and all that. Lisa's from Newton. Newton also has a big history of fast pitch softball as well. And so, in fact, she grew up in the neighborhood where they played. So.
And I think maybe that's why, you know, the history of those groups that have been forgotten, you know, interests me, or I want to make sure it's not forgotten.
They were marginalized then. There's no reason to be marginalized.
Exactly.
Now.
Exactly. And, you know, my own family history, and I have a niece and two nephews that are half black and half white. And I have Latino family members in my family as well. And I just want to make sure their history isn't forgotten, you know. And so that does kind of come into what I get to do for a living.
Yeah, Lyon County's history is not just old white guys.
No.
Not at all.
Far
pretty diverse.
Absolutely. I mean, very diverse. I mean, in Kansas is diverse.
Sure.
I mean, and so again, I, you know, I've always said this was my calling, is to make sure that nobody's story is forgotten. You know, in the end, we all want to be remembered. What did I say at the last annual meeting?
Oh, you say a lot of things.
Well, I'd come across a I think it was a meme on Facebook that said, you know, we're all immortal as long as our stories are being told. And so I thought, that's my superpower. You know, everybody has a gift. Everybody has a superpower as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, that's my superpower, is I grant immortality to people. You know, Artilla Elliott was forgotten for decades. And now we know that her house is part of, you know, Hollywood, you know, not necessarily directly, but it, you know, there is that connection.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. We make connections. We instill community pride. We inspire conversations. That's you know, that's what we do.
Let's do some more of that when we come back from our break. You're listening to the On Air Chat. We're brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. This is KVOE. We are live and local.
Construction jobs don't go away when the weather gets colder. Bruce Davis Construction is available all winter long. When you need commercial dirt work, from demolition to prepare for a building site or parking lot to dirt work and hauling, Bruce Davis will give you a quality job. Bruce Davis Construction, proud to be involved in recent construction jobs, including the addition at Emporia High School, Emporia Travel Plaza, Glendale, and the David Trailer Zoo. Call Bruce Davis Construction at 620-342-5001.
Generating enough heat to keep you warm all winter long. KVOE, 1400 AM and 96.9 FM, live and local.
KVOE, live and local, and time now for a look at sports headlines, being brought to you by Thurston's Plus Auto Body and Automotive. Call 620-342-2613 when your car needs help. You don't have to go where anyone tells you. Go where you want. Now from the 24-hour KVOE newsroom, and a look at all the sports you need, here is Blake Cripps.
Big games coming up tonight for the Emporia State basketball teams as they host Central Missouri. The magic number for the men is 2. That means a win and a Central Missouri loss tonight, and the Hornets are in to Kansas City. Still got a chance if they win out to be a top 6 seed in the MIAA tournament. Meanwhile, for the women, their magic number to clinch a spot in the postseason is 2 over Central Oklahoma and 1 over Rogers State. Tonight is Hoops for Hope, Cancer Awareness Night at White Auditorium. RV Doc pregame show begins at 5 o'clock. Tip-off at 5:30 for the ladies. Men to follow on Mix 104.9. High school basketball from last night. Osage City sweeps Lebo. Tough to do that. 54-52 for the boys. The girls winning by just one, 36-35. Central Heights took 2 from Southern Coffee County, 48-8, the boys' final, and the girls winning at 47-22. Linden with a sweep as the boys go to 20-0 on the regular season. They beat Harrington 84-35. The Linden girls beat Harrington 49-25. Regular season now complete for Class 2A. That means we should be getting the 2A sub-state assignments sometime today. And the Northwestern Oklahoma State baseball team did over 90% of its scoring in two innings, and that was enough. An 11-4 takedown of the Hornets in Alva, Oklahoma on Tuesday afternoon. Hornets led 1-0, but the Rangers scored four in the third inning to take a 4-1 lead. Hornets tied it at four, but then six runs in the seventh put the game out of reach. ESU 7-5. They've got their MIAA opening series on Friday at Northwest Missouri. That's sports. From the KVUE Sports Desk, I'm Blake Cripps.
Thank you, Blake. Sports headlines brought to you this hour by Thurston's Plus Auto Body and Automotive at 708 Lantern Lane. Information available in the Yellow Book and on the web at thurstonsplusautobody.com.
Welcome back to the on-air chat. We're on Thomas hosting, Aaron Harder off on his city commission duties, but what an informative and positive program we've had here, looking at Black history in Emporia and here in Lyon County. Lisa Soller and Greg Jordan, Lyon County History Center, providing some very intriguing information and something that is going to be coming our way very soon, and that's putting together basically places that have historic significance here.
Yes, in for the Black community.
Yeah,
absolutely.
For the Black community. And what a list you've come up with so far.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you find one, that leads to another, that leads to another. And I knew going into it, you know, with choosing the sites. And again, there's more sites. There's more things. I mean, during the break, we were talking about the Black Churches quilt that we have in our collection. And that is an interesting artifact that we have. You know, it was created in 1916, and again, going back to not having a history, we don't know why it was created.
Probably a fundraiser, because that's typically what they were made for.
Yes, so we can assume or we can imagine that it was for a fundraiser for the four Black churches that were here in Emporia in 1916. Eventually, you know, somebody won it, or you know, however they came to have it, and eventually, what had happened is it was part of an estate sale, I believe, in Topeka. And somebody recognized some of those names that were, because the Black Church's quilt is actually, it's a wagon wheel signature quilt. And they recognize some of those family names that were on it. And there's also the addresses of the four Black churches on it. So between the addresses and the family names, they knew it was a piece of Emporia history. And so the Quilt Guild, the Emporia Quilt Guild, I believe, raised money to purchase the quilt and bring it back home. And so we have it here in Emporia in our collection.
Do you have that on display at the History Center?
It has been. It's off of display now. We try to rest our artifacts, especially textiles. We don't want them under the light for long periods of time. But again, it's a great piece of history. And it's tangible. I mean, it's something that you can see and – you know, we have in our collection a photo of Mitt Wilhite, and he was a huge baseball, you know, enthusiast.
He had
several teams throughout the years, but we have in our collection a picture of him probably around 1900-ish, and it has a single Black player on it, unidentified. We have no idea. I can guess it might be from – there was a family, the Maddox family, that was there. And it still might be here. I'm not sure. But it's unidentified. And so, you know, you read a little bit about Mitt Wilhite, and he wasn't afraid to have Black players on the team. He wanted to win. And he didn't care – what, you know, the color of the skin was. He wanted to play the game because he had the love of the game and he wanted to win. But a lot of teams wouldn't play against him because he would put Black players on his team. But we have this great photo of of, you know, these, you know, one of his teams, and it has, you know, this black baseball player on it. And, you know, you look at it and, okay, this is our history. But then you take it that one step further, knowing the history that, and it, you know, just like we were talking about Paul Terry, you know, that he wasn't able to play in the tournament. So, you know, it's a good story, but the story behind it is sometimes, you know, heart-wrenching to know what they went through. So,
well, it's good to know exactly, you know, the barriers that were out there and what they did here to overcome as best they possibly could. You mentioned the church's quilt. I would assume that, you know, religion played a big part in the black community. You mentioned four churches here.
Yeah, four churches were here at one time. And absolutely, you know, during the times, you know, during, you know, the Civil War and, you know, before the Civil War, that's what they held on to when they were enslaved. You know, these people were enslaved. That's all they had sometimes was religion and their faith. And so, yeah, it was definitely – that's what they brought. That's what they had. That's what they brought with them. And so, yeah, we had four churches here at one time. Want to add anything?
I was thinking about the hotel on the Commercial Street.
Yeah, there. You know, one. You know, I have two other sites on this list. The Norma Hotel, which is where I think Dr. Malone is.
To the north.
Yeah, to the north. Owned by the Stewart family, and he would go on the Norma Hotel. It had a soda fountain, and it was a restaurant and a cafe, and then the hotel was on the top. Didn't last very long because he couldn't get enough people to stay in the hotel to be sustainable. But he ended up closing that, selling it, and he opened the Hilltop Driving Range, I believe, where the Flint Hills.
So where Sutherland's is now.
Okay.
In that corner. That was a driving range. Batting cages and trampolines.
Okay.
That's how old I am.
Man. Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, we're looking forward for the next step, taking the sites that we've gathered, the information, putting it into a hard copy format so people can come in. It's not quite ready yet. We're working on it. And then eventually it'll be available on our website as well as the Visit Emporia website. So working with Leland and everybody down at Visit Emporia to get that up so people can take the driving tour to different sites. And then, you know, our next step is to then do the same thing for the Latino community as well. So,
well, that's a great idea, you know, to know where these sites are at, and even more importantly, the information that goes behind it that so many people like myself were totally unaware of, that I learned a lot here today, and I think that's a real positive thing to get that history out there that a lot of people are not aware of.
Yeah. You know, everybody has a story to tell. Every artifact that we have in our collection has a story. Every building that's out there, you know, every event, there's a story behind it. And like Greg said earlier, you know, we're storytellers. That's what we do, because everybody's story is worth being saved and shared.
So membership to the Lyon County History Center.
Membership started at $30 for individuals, and then we go up to $50 for family, and then we have business memberships and corporate sponsorships and that sort of thing. So if you're interested, just come by and talk to us or call us at 340-6310, and we'll hook you up.
So how important are memberships to the Lyon County History Center, Greg?
It's extremely important to have the involvement of the entire community. So not only is it your money, which we appreciate greatly because it allows us to do programming, but it's your membership, your participation. That involves as many people as possible in the processes of what we do.
So what does membership provide those who step up and want to become a Lyon County History Center member?
Well, you know, different levels have different perks. We have a monthly e-blast newsletter that we put out. The hard copy newsletter is one of the perks. You get discounts in our museum store, discounts for facility rentals. We have that great third floor, so one of the perks is you get a discount for that. Advance notice of events, discounts for events if it's a ticketed event. And so there's definitely some advantages to being a member. I think even at our highest level right now is $1,000, and you get a free rental 4 hours on our third floor. Yeah. So
that's a great venue up there, too.
Well, it really is, and thank you for saying so. We're proud of it, and we use it as often as possible.
Well, and that's where our pop-up museum – or the pop-up museum for the Village Elementary will be up there. So not only is it our rental space, which helps with the financial aspect of running a nonprofit and a museum, but it's also our master classroom. We use that front window area to have activities when we have field trips. We have them look at the street – you know, the – east side of the street, and they can compare photos that we have from the 1930s to what it is today. So it's also not just an event venue space, but it's our master classroom as well.
Well, it seems like it's been pretty busy up there, too. A lot of people hold events up there.
Oh,
yes.
Sounds like anything and everything you can think of. So from weddings to concerts to reunions to parties of all manner and sort. It's a well-used facility, and because of its openness, it adapts itself to about any kind of use you can think of. So.
And you've had some good events for First Friday Art Walk activities, too, have you?
Art Forum. Yeah. Art Forum is there. That's a new collaboration for – it started last year, this past semester, but we're continuing it this semester as well, and it has been wonderful.
The Christmas art show there.
Christmas Emporia Artists,
the Spirit
Artisans,
Fair.
The Spirit Fair, which will be coming back in July. It goes back to making those connections with whether it's we're making connections, helping people make connections with their past or their family history, making connections with each other, making connections with different organizations. We're pretty proud of the partnerships we have. We work with well over 60 organizations. That was something that when we moved to the new location, we knew that's what we wanted to do. And so we've reached out to a lot of different organizations because there's power in numbers.
Well, we thank you very much for all you do. Thank you specifically for the History Enlightenment, as always, and more specifically, the Emporia Black History Enlightenment today. Good luck with the project.
Thank you.
Let us know when things are done, and certainly want to head people in that direction so they can
absolutely
take a look.
You'll be the first to know.
All right. Greg, thanks.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you for all that you do for us. We appreciate it very much.
Glad to do it. Greg Jordan, Lisa Soller, Lyon County History Center. Another very informative program here on the chat, brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. For commercial dirt work, demolition, dirt hauling, and more, call Bruce Davis Construction, 342-5001. This has been the on-air chat. We are KVOE, and we are live and local.
Live and local. 1400 AM KVOE Emporia, 96.9 FM K245 VQ Emporia.